This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
All right, Thursdays mean one thing this time of year. It means at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, we're going to give you on ACC Network, and not a good, but a great lacrosse showdown. It's been going on now for about a month. We keep telling you it's almost become appointment viewing. 7 p.m. ACC Network on Thursdays. We got men's lacrosse. Paul Carcaterra joins us now. He knows it all. Breaks it down for us. Paul, always a pleasure. I tell you what, the league is ridiculous, both the men's and the women's side. But these Thursday night matches on ACC Network, the last three have been decided by a single goal. Terrific teams, unbelievable drama, great skill. You've been following this thing for a long time. I know it sounds like we're hyping it beyond belief, but quite frankly, it is what it is.
It is what it is. There has never been a conference in lacrosse like the ACC in 2021. And when the season ended early a year ago with COVID, you kind of just felt with all these fifth-year guys coming back and a couple of transfers, nationally recognized elite players transferring into the conference, you knew that 2021 could be special. But the level that we're seeing now is just ridiculous. This is unequivocally the best conference in college lacrosse history. I don't care what anyone says.
Kark, in some ways, is this kind of the perfect storm, though, with the Ivy League not playing and a combination of other things going on? I mean, is that just kind of been more oil in the engine for the ACC?
Well, I think the ACC, along with the Big Ten and then the Ivy League a year ago, were the three best conferences. But the ACC was always attracting, in my estimation, the top athletes that wanted to play collegiate lacrosse. I think that continues. And I also think the recruiting cycle that we're going to see over the next 4 or 5 years, the impressionable high school players right now are looking at the ACC. And if you're a top player in the country, you're saying to yourself, I want a piece of that. So I think that it's going to have a residual effect from a positive perspective. I also think the Ivy League is giving all of their athletes the ability to be graduate students enrolled in those institutions next year, but it's a one-year exemption. So all these sophomores and juniors and freshmen to be in the Ivy League, if they have an extra year because of the COVID implications over the years, they're going to want to play that fifth year in the Ivy or in the ACC after their Ivy League eligibility is exhausted. So I think you're going to see some transfers in the Ivy League the next couple of years playing in the ACC. But more importantly, you're going to have these four-year elite players like the Brennan O'Neills at Duke that are the top players in the country, and their destination is ACC lacrosse.
All right, so tonight we get Duke-Notre Dame. It just seems like this round robin with these five teams, I mean, everybody is terrific. I mean, goodness gracious, it's crazy. So got to be a little revenge on Duke's mind tonight, right? I mean, hey, the Irish got them the first go-around. They're explosive. If you've been watching these games, if you don't know anything about lacrosse, do yourself a favor tonight at 7 p.m. Put the remote down, just put your feet up, and you're going to be blown away by nonstop action. So getting back to the game, though, tonight, Duke-Notre Dame. What's Duke got to do this time to take care of business?
I thought Duke in the middle of the field was exposed the last time they played Notre Dame. 22 turnovers. I mean, that's awful. I mean, in a good game, you want to be in the 10 range. So they turned the ball over, but that was really a result of Notre Dame applying pressure. And to be quite honest with you, I think they have better athletes in the middle of the field that caused those turnovers. The problems for Duke, if you ask me, though, they won 73% of the faceoffs in that first game, and they still lost by 5 goals. So that kind of scares me. Also, Duke is a team offensively that has relied on Michael Sowers to be the quarterback, and he's the guy that kind of calms the storm, and the ball goes through him. Notre Dame has a guy in Jack Kielty who's playing as well as any defender nationally. He'll be in consideration along with JT Giles Harris from Duke for the National Defender of the Year. So they have kind of the matchup ability against Sowers where a lot of other teams don't. But I also think Notre Dame as a whole is the outlier in the conference. Every team in this conference, including Syracuse, can score with the best of them nationally. I mean, these teams have so much talent offensively. Notre Dame is the outlier. They have the kryptonite. They have the best defense in the country, and they have all the pieces to buckle down and make stops. I don't know if any other conference team has that kind of a defense. Notre Dame, even when they're not winning faceoffs like they did against Duke, they have the ability to make stops. And I haven't seen that with the other ACC teams. So that's why I think Notre Dame is positioned well to win again tonight.
All right, but let's be honest. We haven't seen a closer in sports since maybe Mariano Rivera like Joe Robertson, Kark. I mean, let's be honest. Joe Robertson is the premier closer in sports right now.
He is, and I'm glad you brought him up. And you guys are within the same age frame as me. I call him like the Rodney Dangerfield of lacrosse. He doesn't get the respect he deserves. I mean, he's always making these plays. When you think of Duke, you think of Michael Sellers, you think of Brennan O'Neill, you think of Nakai Montgomery. All this guy does is deliver in the clutch. I mean, he's ice in big moments. He did it against North Carolina. He did it against Virginia. Joe Robertson was a starter since his freshman year. He's been a leading scorer on that Duke team. And he's like that guy that always gets that matchup where if he was playing on another team, he might be attracting the opponent's number one defender. He's like option three or four. And in the clutch, just give it to number eight and let him do his thing.
Paul, you've been covering this sport, played it, covered it for a long, long time. And I mentioned this the other day on the radio. Every now and then as a sports fan, you come across a sport, a player, a team, coach that you probably didn't know about, and you get hooked. And I have found myself, because I didn't grow up with lacrosse. I didn't grow up in a lacrosse family, neighborhood, didn't have a lacrosse stick, ball, or anything else. This sport has been so dynamic and so much fun to watch on both genders, men and women. And the fact that we really promote it like crazy on ACC Network, and you have a year this particular year with so many great teams. It's been cool to, number one, watch it and learn the game. And again, you've been watching and following it for a long, long time. But for Wes and I this year, given the fact that we've had shows now, because last year we were shut down basically with the pandemic, we've had a chance to interview a lot of these players and coaches. The storylines, the people that you meet, we had Nakai Montgomery on yesterday. And just a snapshot of so many student-athletes that play it, the quality of the individual playing this sport is off the charts great. It's incredibly cool to watch the stories and the teams, and not to mention the fact that everybody seems to be ranked in the top five or the top 10. It's almost like you couldn't have scripted a better case scenario for any league, much less the ACC, with what we're getting right now with lacrosse on both the men's and the women's side.
Well, look, I love the women's game as well. My daughter, Payla, is an 11-year-old, and she idolizes Charlotte North, who plays at BC. She wants to watch her every single time out. So I watch the women's game, and I am just blown away with the athleticism. And they don't specialize like the men. Like the midfielders in the women's game, they run like 8 miles per game. They have the GPS trackers. I talked to some coaches. Like 8 miles in a game, a midfielder would run. But you mentioned something, and – to me, it's the storylines off the field. Like a guy like Nakai Montgomery, I've done a feature on him. He plays the guitar. His music range is so diverse in terms of he loves Fleetwood Mac and Kanye West. He's like a top 1% listener on Spotify, Fleetwood Mac and Kanye West. That's a pretty like eclectic type of arsenal music-wise from Nakai. But every single team has that. A guy like Ian Laviano at Virginia, when I did a feature on him, he's really into art and fashion. He does a lot of spray paint type art and just beautiful stuff in terms of just his artistic sense. And a guy like Justin Anderson from North Carolina.
Yeah.
He's 25 years old. He's married. He has a child on the way in May. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So every team, men's and women's, has these storylines on top of being the best lacrosse conference in the country and the best players nationally.
Yep. No question.
All right, so Kark, let's break this apart. Who do you think's emerging fandom in lacrosse is more impressive? Packer, who's late 50s, grew up in North Carolina, didn't really know the sport, you know, has got the helmet signed by Lars Tiffany back there on the shelf, things like that. or Roddy Jones, who in the last 9 months has become lacrosse's biggest fan. And a guy who played football and wouldn't know a lacrosse stick from a freaking pogo stick, you know, 5 years ago?
That's a great question. Look, I mean, Pac has the platform, and he's doing an amazing job of promoting the game. I will say this. I'm going to give both of these guys kind of their opportunity to shine. Roddy has broken down games and, like, has sent emails to Anish Shroff and, like, breaking down moments in the game and players he likes and questions he has. So if Pac watches a game and he sends me an email or a text with some observations, then I'm going to make a judgment. I'm giving Pac the benefit of the doubt to watch a game and digest. I've seen that from Roddy, but it doesn't mean Pac can't do it. So I'm gonna hold my judgment.
Let me tell you something, and I'm a great listener. The key word that you said in that answer was the word digest. And that comes into play when I'm watching lacrosse, because that's normally what I'm doing and not taking notes. I'm digesting. And it normally includes a ice cube and some brown water, but I have gotten hooked watching. I'm telling you. You always hear, but it's the fastest growing sport. Well, you know, you can't relate to that when people say, well, on the West Coast. Well, I'm living in Charlotte, North Carolina. All I know is when you come across the sport, I don't care if it's men's, women's game, doesn't matter. You put the remote down because it's so fast, and these athletes are so talented. There's a ton of scoring. I'm still learning the rules as we go. Roddy's way ahead of me from that perspective. But if you're not entertained watching this on Thursday nights on ACC Network, I cannot help you. It is a great, great viewing sport. And when you get the chance to interact with some of the folks that are playing it, which we've been able to do on Packer and Durham, you'll be able to see some of these other interviews on ACC Network. You realize the quality of the individuals playing it and great coaching it. Like I said, it is exactly what you draw up and say, that's how sports should be. It's great competition. It's great drama. And the folks that are doing it are cool and fun to root for. And you can't ask for anything more than that.
No, you can't. And I'll tell you what, Pac and Durham, you will close the gap on Roddy Jones within 2 hours. If you watch a lacrosse game with me, you guys get the drinks you want. I'll make some chicken parm. You got like Northeast Italian chicken parm. I'll make some chicken parm, razor thin, unbelievable sauce, and some fresh mutts. We will sit down and watch a game. Roddy Jones will be an afterthought. You'll run circles around him.
Hey, listen, that'll be a West problem. I'm not looking to run circles over anything, but chicken parm, as we say on the show, pull up a chair. That's what I'm doing. If you're making chicken parm, I'm in, man. That's a no-brainer.
Hey, Kark, we gave Duke Notre Dame a lot of love tonight. I know Virginia Syracuse is this weekend. Seemingly every game now has something hanging in the balance, not just what it's going to mean in the ACC, but what it could potentially mean nationally. So tell us about this weekend from your standpoint, and what are some key elements we're looking for in the Wahoos and the Orange?
Well, the Wahoos and the Orange, it's interesting because in February, Syracuse beat them by 10 goals up in the Carrier Dome. And everyone was just like, wow, Syracuse is back. They ended 2020 in that shortened season as the number one team in the nation. People were just like, wow, let's buy into Syracuse's offense, top midfield in the country. You know, fast forward a couple months. Honestly, I think the expectations for lacrosse fans right now is the fact that this game could be flipped in terms of the score. Like, people would not be surprised because of what's happened lately with all the injuries and some suspensions from Syracuse that Virginia potentially could win by 10 goals. But I will not call the season on Syracuse right now because this conference is too crazy. There's too much talent for Syracuse. I think they have confidence in terms of what they did to Virginia last time. So now this is the type of game where you think, okay, Virginia, they're on a high. Syracuse is on a low. They're going to hit revenge, and they'll blow out the Orange not so fast. I think Syracuse potentially could come together and play their best game of the season. I think they have the pieces. They have the depth. The biggest question for Syracuse, though, is defensively. It's not even the faceoffs. People think, like, they're not getting the possessions. They don't make the stops. Like, Notre Dame is a perfect example where they can get dominated at the faceoff X by 73% against Duke, but they still get the W. Syracuse can't make the stop, so I'm expecting Syracuse to throw a wrinkle defensively. Maybe we'll see a little bit more zone defense, lighten the load in terms of just the way they think defensively. But this should be a great game as well.
Paul, if you were a GM of a professional lacrosse team and the pool of players to draft from was the entire Atlantic Coast Conference, who would you start your team with?
Wow. That's a fantastic question. I would start it with a pure quarterback. If it was only ACC-driven players, I would go with Michael Sowers, because championship teams, at the end of the day, a lot like a point guard, a lot like a quarterback in football, like, you can't win without that guy controlling your offense. You want that guy who the ball goes through behind and distributes and makes everyone around him better. So for me, it's Michael Sowers. And I think a lot of people are thinking, the way he ended his season last year at Princeton, he was going through statistically what could have been the greatest season of all time. You know, he's comparing himself to his past. And I think Duke has so many pieces that you're not seeing the obnoxious numbers from Sowers. But at the end of the day, I think he's too explosive and he's too sudden with his passes. I think he's one of the most sudden passers I've ever seen. And the ability to break a defender down and in the same motion hit a teammate is incredible. So it would be Sowers. And then you have all those other pieces, right? Like, you want a lockdown defender? Okay, who do I want? JT Giles Harris from Duke or Jack Kielty from Notre Dame? Those guys are elite professional-type lacrosse players. So I could just take the ACC conference. You could have the rest. I would rather have that, honestly, if I'm a GM. Like, give me the ACC. You have every other conference. I'm winning.
I'll tell you what, I'd rather have your have your chicken parm and we'll call it even.
nice side of pasta. We'll do it right, man. Dude, I don't even know if I'm going to go with a salad. We don't need a salad.
Nah, the green only gets in the way, my man. You have dialed in on how we operate. That's exactly right.
There we go. Hey, Kark, thanks as always. Stay well. Look forward to seeing you in person sometime soon.
Anytime. Roddy Jones, you have no shot against these guys.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
It's time for True or False, presented by Dish. Let's go up to the smart people. They're up in Bristol, Connecticut, home of the 54 award-winning Sports Emmy nominations announced this week. Should be 55, but you know what I'm talking about. All right, Josh Macri, tag, you're it. Let's do it.
All right, guys, rapid fire here because we are announcing the field hockey official awards here coming up in about 6 or 7 minutes. So let's get right to it.
True. That's true.
First true or false question today, though, as we were just discussing with Paul Carcaterra, three straight one-goal games on Thursday nights for ACC lacrosse. True or false, that trend continues tonight?
False.
True.
False.
True.
More than one tonight. More than one. False.
I'm going true.
Tell you what, just watch. That's all I'm going to tell you. Just watch it. It will be tremendous stuff. It's a great sport, and this league is loaded. Next one, please.
I'm even going to go Joe Robertson closes again. How about that? I'll double down on the whole deal.
I'll go false on that.
Drew Brooks style. I'll double down like Drew Brooks right there. There we go.
Fair enough. Next one. We go to field hockey before going to field hockey for the awards. Wake Forest. That is true. Wake Forest and North Carolina play each other in the automatic qualifying match tomorrow.
True.
The teams have played three times so far this season.
That's true.
True. Wake Forest has been outscored by Carolina 10-1 in those three games.
True.
True or false, though, Wake will score more than one goal this time around.
True. Wake will score more than one. I like the heels, though.
True. I'll go with that. True.
By the way, I just noticed.
I stand with Packer on that one.
I just noticed, and I didn't know this until I just saw that video, that the umpire, the referee in this, does a little Australian rules when a goal scores. I've never noticed that till that right there.
No white coat, no Panama jacket, though, like in the old Aussie
that
rules
on ESPN.
Game.
That was the
Australian
best. Rules football on ESPN in the early days was awesome. True.
Essendon and Melbourne.
There we go.
Hey, don't worry. We'll get to that. We got June to get to that stuff. We got June and July to get to that stuff, by the way.
Last,
go ahead, Josh.
Last one, super quick. Back to lacrosse, this time on the women's side. Syracuse, BC face off tonight. Two of the three leading scorers in the league, Megan Carney of Syracuse and Charlotte North of BC. True or false?
That's true. Yeah.
Both get a hat trick tonight.
True.
Ooh.
True.
Really?
Offense,
wanna go
offense.
True?
True. Both.
All right. I'll go true. Megan Carney slams the stick, as good as anybody in the league. Charlotte North, a little more polite, mild-mannered. Megan Carney, she didn't care. Texas drops it right on the turf. Could care less. Charlotte, much more polite. All right. Syracuse, BC, 6 o'clock on ESPNU. Then you got 7 o'clock lacrosse over on ACC Network. Man, we're going to be working the recall button on the remote.
You know who loves it? Is Chester. Chester loves lacrosse. You don't believe me? Give me a shot on camera 4 real quick. Look at that big boy. Look
there you go, Chester. Look at that guy.
He's praying to the lacrosse gods right now. Oh, please. Yep. Please give me overtime. Right. Please give me overtime.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on ACC Network. We have been bestowed upon again to make official announcements. We have not let any secrets out. We have done another great job in that department. That's why they keep asking us back to do this. But it's time for the Field Hockey Awards, Wes, and we will have everyone covered. Everybody is covered on this one. We're talking about Coach of the Year, Freshman of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Offensive Player of the Year. Here we go. Let's do it.
Let's start with the Coach of the Year, and I would think this would not be a surprise. The 11th time in her incredible career that Karen Shelton of North Carolina has been named the ACC Coach of the Year, guiding the Tar Heels to their fourth consecutive ACC Field Hockey Championship title and 23rd in her career. Two-time defending NCAA champion, finished atop the spring standings at 5-0, the regular season at 15-1, and Carolina currently riding a 14-game winning streak. So Karen Shelton is the ACC Field Hockey Coach of the Year, Pac.
And I say this with all due respect. It's almost become the Karen Shelton ACC Coach of the Year, isn't it? I mean, she's almost cornered the market in some respects. She's been that great, and her program so unbelievable. But a wonderful person, great coach, and certainly well-deserved.
All right. The Freshman of the Year in ACC Field Hockey is a native of Esher, England, and it is Darcy Bourne of Duke, 7th in the ACC in points with 17, tied for 4th in goals scored with 8, leads the Blue Devils in both categories, has had 46 shots total and 22 on goal. A member of England's national team, Darcy has come in and had an immediate impact in Coach Buston's program. And our congratulations to Darcy Bourne as the ACC Freshman of the Year. Well done.
Tremendous player. And what a perfect name, though, right? From England, Darcy Bourne. Just perfect. I mean, perfecto. But she can flat out play, man. The highlights that she puts together, unbelievable.
No doubt. We have told you a lot about Charlotte North of Boston College. Well, the Eagles also not only have one of the best scorers in the league, they have the Defensive Player of the Year in ACC Field Hockey. And this is Joanna Kennedy, twice named the ACC Defensive Player of the Week this season. Also honored twice as the National Player of the Week, a native of Watertown, Mass. She leads the ACC in saves with 6.75 per game. She's 8.83 in save percentage in conference games. 3 shutouts, leads the conference in save percentage at almost .800. Her 21 saves in the double overtime win over Syracuse, the most by an ACC keeper this season, and 3rd on Boston College's all-time single game list. That is work, especially in this league, at the way they pepper it in. So congratulations to Joanna Kennedy of Boston College, Pac.
Tremendous player. Again, you can't go wrong with any of these announcements, because if you've watched this on ACC Network, the ladies can flat out play.
Yep. The Offensive Player of the Year is from North Carolina, and it is Aaron Mattson, the 2nd field hockey student athlete to be voted ACC Offensive Player of the Year 3 times. The first since 4-time selection Katie O'Donnell of Maryland back in the early 2000s. Mattson leads the league with 56 points, 24 goals, 8 assists, 11 of UNC's 15 goals in 5 spring games, and she assisted on another 6-time ACC Offensive Player of the Week, 3-time National Player of the Week. She's second in UNC scoring, 8th all-time among ACC players with almost 200 points. And the season's not over yet. And on that note, we welcome Erin Mattson to Packer and Durham here today on this award-winning Thursday. And Erin, we offer our congratulations. Well done.
Hello. How are you guys?
Good. Welcome back.
We're great. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You act so surprised. I mean, did we scare you?
No. No, Dana, our social media manager, texted me yesterday, and she's like, can you do this interview? Like, I know it's early. We're hoping you can. It's with Packer and Durham. I was like, yes, of course I could do it. I love them. So I'm happy to be here.
Another great year for the team. Another great year for you. Doesn't get old, though, does it? I mean, it looks like you and your team were having so much fun playing the game, especially during this pandemic and everything else. And there's nothing better than putting in the work and having success. But your team just looks like they are having a blast playing.
Yeah, we are. We definitely are very lucky with the culture we have and how much fun we have on the field and off the field with each other. And it's been a long time coming, and now it's finally tournament time, and it's finally where the real fun starts. But I think everyone's just really excited to be home this Friday, host the AQ game, and go from there.
Erin, let's talk about this season, because we touched on it with some volleyball players and coaches. Obviously, they've gone to the national tournament out in Omaha. This is a long season. It's been really unlike any season, I guess, in field hockey as well. Give us the temperament of this. Has it felt like a long campaign? I mean, this really started back midsummer for you guys, I guess, in some respect, right?
Yeah, it's definitely been a long time coming. I think it's normal for me just because I'm used to playing year-round because I do play in the summer. So I'm used to, you know, never stopping and just taking little breaks here and there. For the team, I know it's very different because we normally have the spring season to kind of regroup and go a little lighter at some points and stuff. But I think that's what makes it more fun, just because it's been so much work put in, so much effort with sports psych meetings and film sessions, along with just regular practice and working out and stuff. So I think it'll show who can keep that focus, you know, for the whole year and come out on top in the end. And that'll be the deciding factor.
Erin, how do you reboot between all the schoolwork, the pressure of playing, all the responsibilities of staying healthy so you can practice and everything else? How do you reboot? How do you get away from all of this?
I don't know. I think I just love it so much, so it's pretty easy for me to want to come back out on the field. And with the U.S. team and everything, it's nice to also kind of get a change of scenery and be with the girls over there and have kind of two teams that I'm a part of, which is really interesting and cool. But like you said, we have so much fun. It's not really that hard to get excited for practice or tournaments or anything. And obviously winning is what everybody loves, what drives me. So, as long as we keep doing that, you know, there's nothing really to complain about.
I don't mean to get personal with you. And if this is crossing the line, please stop me. So what do you do? What do you do for fun when it's not involving field hockey?
I love my friends. We have a lot of fun at the house. We try to, you know, do fun things, especially during this time, do fun new things. Lots of ice cream dates. Love ice cream. We actually go to a lot of restaurants, too. Love food.
Yeah, there you
go. I'm a big foodie. It probably excites me more than it should. Yeah.
There we go. That's what
I like reading sometimes, music.
All right,
beach, you know, the normal stuff.
Okay, so this is what we, because you're such a great player, so we're going to get to know you a little bit. That's why I said if this is too personal, please stop me. So ice cream. All right, let's go ice cream first. All right, Packer and Durham's going to show up in Chapel Hill. You're taking us on an ice cream treat. Where are we going?
Deal.
All right, where are we going to go, and what is the go-to Erin Mattson ice cream call? What is the, hey,
oh boy,
the perfect ice cream date is what for Erin Mattson?
Okay, I'm really bad with favorites and picking one thing. But obviously, if you come to Chapel Hill and, you know, I bring you on an ice cream date and everything, we have to go to Yopo. That's just the staple on Franklin Street. And they switch up the flavors every week, but always go with the Oreo frozen yogurt. And here they do it right. They put the toppings in the middle of the ice cream.
Nice.
So you never run out of them. You don't, you know, you don't eat the toppings first. So that's why they're smart. But I usually get Oreo ice cream with either Reese's cups in the middle or strawberries in the middle. I know.
We are in. We're going to do this. Aaron, that is no pun intended. That is the sweet spot. Anything with Reese's peanut butter cups is the greatest. You can't screw it up. Can't screw it up.
All right, here's my Chapel Hill question for you since you're a foodie. Timeout or sunrise?
Oh, sunrise. But honestly, I only say that because I've been to Timeout once. And so I don't know if I'm the right person to ask for that question. But I know, really? Okay, do I need to go more? I don't know if Coach is listening to this. I don't know if she'll be happy with me going to Timeout more.
No, I understand. They're two places. They both do basically chicken breakfast biscuits, and they're both phenomenal. That's why I ask. There's always a question about Timeout or sunrise. You know how it works in Chapel Hill.
Yep.
That's the question everybody gets asked, right?
All right, wait a minute. I want to go back to the ice cream, because ice cream and biscuits are two different food groups. Those are two different. You got to mentally be prepared. Those are two different worlds. So they can't collide. So I want to go back to your coach a second. So Karen Shelton, who we've had on the show a gazillion times, is a brilliant coach, as you well know. Do you find her to have similar taste in ice cream? Because normally there's a connection with players and coaches. What is coaches go to? If it's not ice cream.
I honestly don't know. Maybe I'll ask her at practice later today. We did have a pickleball tournament, I think last week it was, and we got Yopo afterwards. The coaches got us Yopo. And I'm pretty sure she just picked the classic vanilla, which honestly doesn't surprise me because you know her. She's very classic, simple. I don't know if she put toppings on it. I'm going to have to ask her, but I'll let you guys know.
We want to know the answer to that question because I know something tells me Karen Shelton may give that as just kind of a facade that, hey, I'm just going to go vanilla and let the girls have fun. But behind closed doors, I think Karen Shelton throws some crazy combos on you that you'd have no idea.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I think.
I'll start digging.
Okay. I want to know the answer to that.
Okay. Aaron, I want to turn to tomorrow because you guys, the last three games have all gone overtime. You've played Wake Forest three times already. The familiarity factor, but yet, what have you learned with these last three games you guys have won going to overtime?
I think it's definitely important for us not to get complacent in the game. You know, we go up and a two-goal lead, even a three-goal lead, I mean, we joke about it all the time. I think we need a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 goal lead, you know? And also, a shutout's really important for us. Our defense is going to start really honing in on not giving up as many corners. And we always want to walk away. I saw in the pregame stuff you had before I got on here, it was like, will Wake Forest score one goal? And coming from me and the team, I hope that's not true because we're always looking for a shutout. But I think it's just important for us to not take the foot off the gas and make sure we keep that lead throughout the game just so that we don't head into another overtime because nobody likes that.
By the way, academically, how are we doing? We're glad to get into the end of the line here or not? That's been a grind.
Yeah, no, everything's going good. I'm actually, it's going well. I'm enjoying all of my classes. I think I'm really excited for summer to happen more than usual and to really get off of the Zoom meetings and everything. But I am taking a couple summer classes, so those will be good. But, I can't complain. Everything's great.
Well, you're awesome to watch. Well, so is your team. And but I do want some lowdown on Karen Shelton. All right? We need to find out a little bit more about Coach. And the fact that you didn't know that answer tells me Coach is running a tight ship. She, you know, hey, here's the deal, but we need to get the answer to that one.
Okay.
Well,
I'm
and here's
on
the
it.
Other. Here's the other, Aaron. Here's the other thing we have to thank you for. The last time you were with us, you helped us get the stick.
Yeah.
No doubt. Now, I mean, you helped us get the stick, And when Karen came back on the show, she said pretty much that, you know, hey, Mattson came and got your stick for you. So
yep.
You have already delivered for the Packer and Durham program in a big big way, because Mark can now scratch his back with both hands.
Both hands.
He takes both sticks and just
dual
scratches
back
his back.
So that's what I use them for. They're right over here in the corner. I got a collection. You know what? Might need to get a third, Aaron. I got the two national championship sticks over here. Just saying.
We're working on it. Yeah, I mean, hey, I would like another ring, too. So I'll work on that for you.
All right. I'm just saying. Free ice cream for everybody. That's all I'm going to tell you. I love it.
Congratulations again, Aaron. Three times the ACC Offensive Player of the Year. Good luck tomorrow in the AQ.
Thank you. Thank you. This was fun. Have a great day, guys.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Virginia Tech Athletic Director Whit Babcock coming up top of the hour. Look forward to that. And Hokie's got a lot of stuff going on in Blacksburg. Capital campaign. Yep. We'll get into all that stuff. Spring football. Didn't have the game, but people excited to see what Justin Fuente and the Hokies do. They open up with North Carolina in the very first game of the season in football. Baseball's rocking. Ooh. Softball's doing its thing. All kinds of stuff to get into with Whit. We look forward to having him back on the program. But, Wes, we lead off today the show about an announcement from the governor of North Carolina, Roy Cooper, yesterday that based on the trends, it looks like June 1st, if we keep on going doing our deal here, looks like we're going to eliminate all capacity gatherings and restrictions on June 1, which is great news, given the fact that the Clemson-Georgia football game is scheduled for Bank of America Stadium in Uptown Charlotte. And, of course, we know the ACC football championship game, same venue, later in December. That is great news from that perspective, not to mention everybody else and their brother having fans in the stands. So it's all good, big picture.
Yeah, I think so. Roy Cooper yesterday telling folks in Raleigh, announcing in Raleigh, I should say, that they are going to eliminate restrictions on gatherings and capacities June 1, if progress continues to move forward in the state of North Carolina. All the numbers are very positive in that light, including vaccinations that are increasing by the day, and that's been a good thing in North Carolina. We're kind of following the map here, Mark, let's be honest, right? We're kind of following the map through the ACC footprint, because a lot of these schools and institutions are going to have to make decisions based on state and then county regulations. We saw that play out during the NCAA men's basketball tournament, certainly in Indianapolis. But as we found out going through this process, and I thought about this after we touched on it in the first hour, we've got to be cognizant as well of the institutions. Remember, we had a variety of scenarios with institutions this year, right? Duke elected not to have anybody throughout the course of the season in the fall and in the winter. And I think it's something we just got to keep an eye on. But that's very encouraging news, especially as it relates to, let's be honest, football events like the ACC kickoff in July. That's a very encouraging sign for ACC kickoff. It's incredibly encouraging for not only Georgia-Clemson September 4th and the kickoff game at BOA, but also for the ACC championship game in December. And I know December's a long way away, but still, let's be honest. We dealt with so much unknown a year ago that I think you got to be very encouraged to hear North Carolina. Now, what do we find out about Virginia? What do we find out about, you know, Massachusetts, which has certainly been a hot spot? State of New York, which is obviously shut down at length. I know they've let some folks back in for certain events in that state. So we'll watch the ACC footprint. We'll talk to the athletic directors and others along the way. But this is an awfully big step and very encouraging news for certainly the four institutions in the state of North Carolina.
Well, I'll emphasize again, regardless of where you're watching or listening to us, we're still in a pandemic. You still have to be smart. You still have to social distance, wear a mask. If you are in the mood for vaccines, I highly suggest you do it. In my opinion, I've had two, and I hate the doctor and needles. I've had two. I didn't have any issues with it whatsoever. I will tell you, one of our daughters had a terrible reaction to it. She was sick for a few days, but she's good to go. We're making progress, but we're not at the finish line yet. So while it's cool to give you this kind of news, which is certainly encouraging, there is still a lot of work to be done in our country. So I just want to emphasize that again. While we can, I think, see the light at the end of the tunnel, we're not at the end of the tunnel. So, you know, let's keep on rocking and doing our thing. And hopefully we can kind of get back into the routine of hanging out with friends and tailgating and going to games and going to restaurants and chilling and grilling and living the great life that we've got in this great country.
Yeah, I think it's, look, normalcy is kind of what we crave, or at least what the new normal is going to be, right?
Yeah.
And again, I'll emphasize this, while the states are making decisions and the counties are making decisions, my advice to fans, college fans, football fans, ACC fans would be this. Keep an eye and watch how professional sports reacts as the spring and summer move along. Because just because states are loosening their restrictions, there's still some concessions being made by the NHL, Major League Baseball, NBA, that type thing. They want to make sure. Now, granted, two of those sports are played almost exclusively indoors. On a rare occasion, they may play outdoors as the NHL does. But the idea, watch Major League Baseball. I think that's the one, you know, like we said this, what? Back a couple of weeks ago in Texas, opening day, shoulder to shoulder, right? Watch the facilities in the footprint of the ACC as it relates maybe to Major League Baseball. Keep an eye on, like, certainly New York, Massachusetts, the Maryland, Virginia area, Georgia, Florida, those type things. That'll give you an idea as to the comfort level in those particular states as we get ready to move toward what we hope is a clean and clear start to college football season. As
well, I'm going to tell you what, the comfort level in Death Valley and in Athens, Georgia, for that opener here in my backyard is on a scale of 1 to 10 is about a 2,000. Because both of those fan bases are ready to go. And
yep.
Again, I know it's April the 22nd. It's Pat Narduzzi's birthday day. And we still got plenty of time to break stuff down. But the anticipation of those two that are 65 miles apart, two different states, two different leagues, and like I said, great fan bases, yeah. Tradition, history, and both teams should be in the mood to say, this is a year we can win the national championship. It is a tone setter for not only those two programs, but I think for college football. I think it's the best non-conference game of the year in college football, Clemson and Georgia. And the fact that Governor Cooper here in North Carolina, it looks like it's going to be a green light special. Man, whatever money you accumulated over this pandemic that you couldn't spend on vacations or whatever, it may go into trying to find two on the 50 at Bank of America. Because let me tell you something, that ticket, I can't even imagine what that's going to cost. Because, like I said, you could have that stadium could be $160,000 and it'd be sold out for Clemson, Georgia. Sold out.
Let me just get right to the chase here before Whit Babcock joins us. At 8:55 on April the 22nd, do you have your tickets?
No.
For the game?
I do not.
Okay. Do you have your sideline pass for the game?
I do not. I don't normally do sideline. Okay. If you see me on the sideline pass, I'm working. But, I mean, I'm not one of those guys that, hey, I want to be down on the field. That's not the way I roll. That's not me at all.
Who knows? Mr. Packer may be called into action for that Saturday night game. Never know.
To do what?
I don't know. Well, you're an award winner. You're winning an Emmy, apparently. So they won an Emmy award winner.
Why do you keep saying apparently? I'm holding the thing right here in your face.
That's last year.
There's no apparently.
Yeah.
I got it.
All right.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.